Hello there. Welcome to this episode of Forest Ghost Conversations. This is your host, Anthony King, and this week, along with Mrs. Forest Ghost Conversations, we will be discussing episode 8 from season 3 of The Bad Batch titled Bad Territory. I will also be doing trailer discussions for The Acolyte and Rebel Moon Part 2 in this action-packed episode. Now, before we get started, I'm inviting you to support Forest Ghost Conversations on Patreon. If you're a fan of the podcast and would like to consider pledging your support, there will be a link in the episode description for you to check out the various tiers offered. Also, please be sure to check out our Tee Public store to buy some Forest Ghost Conversations merchandise. And without further ado, it's time to gather around the campfire for some Forest Ghost Conversations. All right, everybody, welcome back to Forest Ghost Conversations. And like I mentioned in the intro, this is a jam-packed episode. We got Bad Batch discussion, we got Acolyte trailer, we got Rebel Moon Part 2 trailer. We got it all in this fully loaded episode for you all. But we also have a ton of news this week. For whatever reason, Lucasfilm decided to drop a whole lot of news on us this week. While last week I was like, there's not a whole lot going on. And then this week decided to change their minds and were like, no, we're actually going to drop all the news this week. So I think I've compiled it all the best that I can here and did the rundown. So you'll get that all that coming up right here in our Cloud City Gossip segment. All right. So let's get into all that here. So let's start with the beginning, the Mac Daddy of it all, in my opinion, the 25th anniversary of the Phantom Menace re-release. So tickets are now available. So if you want to go to the cinema to see this incredible movie, perhaps for the first time, perhaps for the 100th time, perhaps for the 20th time in the cinema, go get your tickets now because you want to get the best seat. You want to be center in that screen so that you can hear the pod race in all of its glory and see Maul and do all that great stuff that accompanies the Phantom Menace accordingly. There will also be a sneak preview for The Acolyte accompanying the movie, so it's just an extra bit of Star Wars goodness for your time at the theater. And if the 25th anniversary of The Phantom Menace wasn't enough, how about watching all 9 films from the Skywalker saga in a row? Some cinemas will be doing the full 20-hour plus marathon of every Star Wars film in the Skywalker saga on May 4th in honor of Star Wars Day. So go online now to get tickets because I'm sure that this special event will sell out fast. Additionally, Hayden Christensen, the Chosen One himself, was recently at the Empire State Building in New York City to usher the Imperial March, what they're dubbing as a consumer products campaign, which is leading towards May 4th. So along with his appearance and the announcement of a ton of new products featuring Star Wars imagery and all that type of stuff, I saw some Blue Milk product, which is finally long past due. The Empire State Building itself had a Star Wars makeover with Empire imagery projected onto the massive building. So that was in conjunction with ILM, and it looked really cool. So if you're in New York City, be sure to check it out. And you can also look at the visuals on StarWars.com in case you missed it. So also, again, there's a whole ton of lot of news here. Tickets for D23, the Ultimate Disney Fan Convention, will go on sale next week. The full ticket prices and plans have been released and they're available online so you can find out what is the best option for you. And the Sunday portion of the convention will even feature the Disney Legends Celebration, in which a slew of members from the Disney family of entertainment will receive honors for their lifetime of work. Related to Star Wars then, Harrison Ford, Frank Oz, and John Williams will receive this prestigious honor. So I'll be there in August, and I hope to see some of you at the convention, and I can't wait. It's going to be a lot of fun, and I think there's going to be a ton of other Star Wars announcements at this convention as well, since there is no celebration this year. So furthermore, again, speaking of celebration, the key art for Star Wars Celebration in Tokyo has been revealed, and it is awesome. And also, fans have been informed that tickets will be available starting on Thursday, May 2nd, at 7 p.m. Eastern time. So if you're planning to go, make sure you get your tickets early and start making your flights to Japan. Finally, new trailers for The Acolyte and Rebel Moon Part 2, The Scargiver, were released. We'll be doing live reactions and discussions for both within this podcast today, so get ready. The Acolyte will premiere on Disney Plus this coming June 4th, and there were also a couple of posters for the show, which you can find right now on StarWars.com. So that is all the news that I had compiled for this week's episode, folks. On the other side of this break, I'll be back with my Acolyte discussion as well as Rebel Moon Part 2, The Scar Giver. And then after that, we'll have our Bad Batch discussion with Mrs. Forsco's conversation. So stay tuned for all of that. You won't regret it. Thanks for staying tuned to Force Ghost Conversations, everybody. We, again, are going to really dive into some of the big, meaty stuff that came out this past week. And we're going to start off with this Acolyte trailer. So this is your first, if this is your first time being here for a trailer discussion here on the podcast, what I basically do is I pull it up on YouTube. I do a YouTube search for whatever it is. So in this case, it's the Acolyte. And I pull it up on YouTube. I have it from the official Star Wars Disney Plus account, the Acolyte official trailer, Disney Plus is what it's titled, from Star Wars on YouTube. And basically, I just live react to it. I play it. I don't have the audio on it, so I don't get flagged for anything. And then I just kind of talk as I go through it. But if you want, I also give ample time here at the beginning to, you can pause the episode, you can pull it up at the same time. I'll tell you when I hit play, if you want to pull it up on a different device and do all that, we can feel like we're watching it together. Anything that gives us a little bit more sense of community in doing this process that doesn't feel stagnant or just a trailer discussion itself. And then, of course, after just some whoa, ooh, ah, all that great stuff about some live reactions, we'll do some just general discussion points and call it a day here. And then we'll move on to our other trailer that dropped also this week, Rebel Moon Part 2, The Scar Giver. So much going on in the world of Star Wars, Lucasfilm, the adjacent areas of the Lucasfilm galaxy to discuss in this episode. So without further ado, let's really get into this Acolyte discussion here. And boy, was this a trailer I was absolutely looking so much forward to seeing. I remember hearing the conversation at Celebration last year about people just being like, this show is going to blow you away. And I've seen the trailer already, so this isn't a spoiler. It's not like it's an original, like, first-time reaction kind of thing. It rocks. This trailer rocks. And I will tell you, I've read literally just about everything in the High Republic to this point. I'm just awaiting on the most recent book that came out to actually get that and read that. But once that does, I will be almost up to date with everything, minus a few comics that I'm just waiting on Marvel Unlimited to get a stockpile of, but I'll be basically up to date with everything. I love the High Republic. I love the stories that are being told in this era, and I can't wait to see it visualized on screen. Now, I don't want to discredit what they're doing with the Young Jedi Adventures series. That is also really well done. I can't wait to talk about that on the podcast. I'm not really seeing a whole lot of podcasts talking about the Young Jedi Adventures, and I think there is a great deal of Star Wars wisdom within those episodes. So just because it's for a child audience doesn't mean that there isn't great things to be taken away from it and good canon pieces that we can discern from all of it as well. But we'll get into that in a different day. Today, we're here to talk about the Acolyte. And let's just get into this trailer here. So pull it up on your YouTube or other video site that you've got. And I'm going to hit play here. So you can either pause it and pull it up, or you can just let me talk through the way here. Oh, who knows? We're going to just get through all this here in a second here. So I am going to hit play in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Go. I love seeing the High Republic robes. It's just like this, not futuristic, but it's a really proud way of dressing, if you ask me. It's not as humble as what they wear in the prequel era. This is Souls. This is the new Jedi Master that we see. It's almost like a Yoda figure. This is about 100 years before the Phantom Menace, too. I think that was a Vernestra Rowe in the background there. Oh, that kid's seeing fire. Carrie Ann Moss in the Jedi robes. That's exactly what we were looking for here. Ooh. Look at this great action here. Wow. Love some of this work here. I've heard the review that someone is saying it's like Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, which I haven't seen yet, but I have seen a trailer for it, and it looks very similar to the Kung Fu style that they've incorporated with that. Wow. Someone's killing Jedi. There's Killing Darkness, Convict. What is this? Vernestra Rowe, yeah. Kelneka, too, played by Yona Suoramo. Anisea. I think she's like a part of like a witch coven too in this universe here. Maybe has some force abilities. who's that person there? Is this Octo? I don't know. And then the red lightsaber. Yeah, we're on this like watch here. What is red lightsaber? Who is all this? Did they see? Maybe they don't even see it. Let's be honest here. There's a lot of presumptions here. Let's 2-episode premiere, June 4th on Disney Plus. The Acolyte is coming. I believe it's 8 episodes. Holy cow, there's a whole lot in that trailer. I mean, just literally seeing some of that famous imagery that we're used to seeing from the prequels, The Phantom Menace and Attack of the Clones, Revenge of the Sith, of the Jedi Temple on Coruscant. But we're also seeing it with that High Republic flair, right? The new uniforms, the different lightsabers, the different people walking around, right? You got Vernestra Rose, one of my favorites from the stories, right? Vernestra Rose has this purple whip lightsaber, which I definitely hope we get to see in a live action sense. That's kind of like number one on my like wish list, bucket list for this show, is to just actually see that in live action, because as soon as she was announced, I'm like, that's it. That's exactly what we need to see right now. I'm interested about Jedi Master Soul. I'm interested about who these assassins are, who the dark side characters are in this. I know this is supposed to be kind of how the Sith can reemerge again and create this power, but how are they doing this 100 years out? And I'm seeing this discussion online about, you know, what is canon, what is not canon. Do those people that maybe see a red lightsaber have to die? Let me just say this right now. Let's just wait to see the story as it unfolds, right? We may be seeing stuff out of context. Maybe that scene's not even in the show. Maybe the lighting is different. Maybe it's just meant for a trailer to emote a reaction. Trailers are meant to get us hyped and excited for stories. And it is intended, it's a marketing tool to get us to watch it, right? And sometimes they do misleading things in trailers. They edit things differently. A voiceover is different. A scene is slower, a scene is faster. It doesn't play out necessarily the same way all the time. So to fully think that what we saw of the red lightsaber and that group battling it at the end is complete canon, that is not necessarily the case, first and foremost. Number two to that front, what I will say, is that just because someone has a red lightsaber doesn't mean they're automatically a Sith. Case in point, Kylo Ren, right? Not a Sith. He will tell himself he's not a Sith. He's just a dark side user. Now maybe because he was getting tutelaged under Snoke Palpatine that it was, I don't know. he wouldn't define himself as a Sith, right? There is a dogma and a set of discipline and rules and structure that comes to being a Sith and practicing that mentality. And then there's, you know, like the Jedi too, right? Just because you have a lightsaber doesn't mean you're a Jedi. Seeing that now more than ever. And another case in point too on the red lightsaber thing, like Asajj Ventress, right? Not a Sith. Savage Opress, not a Sith. Maul has a lightsaber still, not a Sith. just because you're a dark side and you use the Force does not automatically indicate that you are a Sith. So even if they do see a red blade, that doesn't necessarily mean that all those folks need to die. Now, maybe they do. Maybe that is the kind of the warning call. They see these Jedi dying. They're just falling off the face of the earth here and there. And this is this like the climactic part of episode 8, which is all these Jedi that we've come to know across these various episodes now pass. And it starts this investigation that doesn't lead anywhere. Now, perhaps that is what happens, but I'm going to have to go on a limb here and probably say, in terms of my expectations, I wouldn't expect that personally. I think they have hired some of these characters and actors to portray these characters for several seasons to come, especially as we hear more and more of Leslie Headland talking about the show on a grander scale. She's envisioning multiple seasons and bringing in more characters from the books into these into upcoming seasons, right? So we got Vernestra Rowe, and there's maybe, you know, a couple others that we'll probably see throughout the course of the season, but she's definitely interested and hoping to expand into larger categories of the books and the comics for seasons 2 and beyond. Now, the last thing that I'll say to that point, too, is the Jedi are very good at not being aware of the truth being put in front of them, right? I don't want to get too much into the books of the High Republic, particularly, but the Nameless, which are a Jedi destroying group of like hounds kind of which they can't really see, to be honest, but they see them at various points. Like, it's very well known in various timelines that people have seen them, and yet they're just, people are raising alarms and nothing's being acted out upon them. Like, it's just, there's a bunch of hubris around that, like, in the Jedi Order, especially this time, that, like, nothing can happen to us, we're kind of unbeatable. Which comes to a head in fruition in Revenge of the Sith, as we will later see. So we're starting to see those seeds kind of be placed in the High Republic that I think will be hinted at even more in this series. And then obviously the Phantom Menace is really where we get that beginning of the end kind of storyline there. Literally, again, case in point too, Palpatine is literally right in front of their faces throughout the 6.5-7 hours that the prequel trilogy encompasses. And literally they can't even sniff him right there. Like, their ability to understand and manipulate the Force is diminished. The Shroud of the Dark Side covers everything. They're being forced to do things that are not necessarily the Jedi, and they're losing their way. All that stuff comes into play. And again, like, the Jedi are very well known for kind of like letting things slide or not believing the truths that are being presented to them, all that stuff. So go back to point one, let the show play out as it will. We don't know how things are going to be. We can speculate, of course. We see someone with a red lightsaber. Maybe it is a Darth Plagueis. Maybe it is a really, really young Sheev Palpatine. Who knows what the whole deal and jam is here. Maybe it's even Plagueis's master, right? We don't know really how and where people start falling on the timeline in new canon. So it could really be a whole slew of people as we get into the series. So just get ready to have, I would say, just go in with open expectations, honestly, first and foremost, so that you're open to this new age, this new era of Star Wars storytelling, that maybe you can open up your heart to the High Republic books and comics if you haven't started those yet. But also that as we get into this grander and beyond world before the Phantom Menace, that things are going to happen and change that will reinterpret our imagination for the Phantom Menace and the prequel trilogy itself. So just as every time something new comes out in Star Wars, it helps us to understand and recontextualize stuff that already came before. So that's really the exciting thing of this show. So again, I just want to say, take your time with it, be open to things, don't be so quick to judge and all that stuff. Like, let it play out, let all 8 episodes happen, and then go ahead and make your choices and judgments based off of that. But again, I think this is an awesome trailer. I love seeing some of the kung fu action, some great hand-to-hand combat in this. Carrie-Anne Moss is a Jedi. Yes, sign me up. Daphne Keen is a Jedi. Yes, sign me up for all that. And the High Republic will be put on full display, so I think that a grander audience will be able to pick up those books and comics and dive into a great world that maybe they have been reluctant or hesitant to get into. So that is the Acolyte trailer. Let's move over to Rebel Moon Part 2, The Scargiver, which, you know, we are big fans of Rebel Moon Part 1, Child of Fire, here at Force Ghost Conversations, and we're going to continue our Rebel Moon conversations here accordingly. So Part 2 does come out on April 19th of this year on Netflix. It is Part 2, going to be a concluding story kind of to what they set up in Part 1. And it's, according to Zack Snyder, a full-out war movie, which gets me really excited. I cannot wait to see this show. Movie, I should say, not show. And from what I've seen so far, the visuals of this movie are incredible, and I think it's going to line up well with what we've seen in Part 1. And then in the summertime, it's been announced that the extended editions of these movies, the R-rated, hard R-rated cuts, are going to be released sometime in the summertime. So they're going to be full 3 hours long, so a full hour on each of these movies to give you the full 6-hour experience. And then hopefully we get some more Rebel Moon from there, but we got to make this one a success first. I know Part 1 was a massive success for Netflix. I need Part 2 to be a success, and I think those extended cuts will definitely need to be a big success as well. So without further ado, pull up Rebel Moon Part 2, The Scargiver, official trailer, Netflix. Just search it on your YouTube. Pull it up now. It's about 2 minutes and 42 seconds long. And we'll be right here waiting for you. So if you want to pause it, pull it up, that'd be great. But if not, I'm starting it in 5 seconds. So 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Hit play. I see that, like, molten sword there. So this is definitely her aboard an Imperium ship. I think this is when she becomes like a stowaway or something like that. That molten sword looks great. The visual effects of this movie are really astounding. Jimmy, their nightmares you and I find together. I mean, Jimmy is just a real big standout. He's a great in the book, too. If you got the chance to read the novelization of part one. And I can just hear already the audio slave in the background. We got Cochise's going on in there. This is excellent. This is oh well, there's the Tarek and there's the Princess Issa. Ooh. Ed Skrein is back, obviously, as you saw from the end. And here's definitely some parts here where it's Gunner and Sam, and we're seeing a lot of these Seven Samurai aspects that really showcased in the beginning of the movie. Well, it's really what they were meant for in the terms of describing this movie. Yeah, Ed Skrein is going off on this movie like he did. He was a real standout in that first movie, part one. And I'm glad that he wasn't ended. So Jimmy's going to come in and fight here. He has no choice but to fight. I mean, this is going to be probably one of the best scenes in the movie, if you ask me right now. Just Jimmy going full. I mean, they're destroying some of these ships here, which have been told in the book, like it's and then I believe in part one too, but definitely in the novelization, they're like no one has ever brought down some of these Imperium ships before. So it's just like the fact that this like group of farm people, these farm hands, are actually able to do this, like it's incredible. Holy cow! I mean, Korra's even got a molten sword too. This whole Imperium ship is destroying itself. We're going to get the backgrounds of these characters, it looks like. A bit more to their backstory, which I think was definitely needed for part one. Wow. Again, give me some audio slave in any trailer. It's going to be awesome. Wow. What a great trailer. What a great way to get me hyped for part two, even though I was already really hyped for part two. I think that Rebel Moon is going to really knock us off our socks here when we have the full story intended for us here, and especially when we get those extended editions in the summertime. Again, like similar to the Acolyte, great action here. I love seeing actually more of the Molten Swords. I think that was one of the coolest parts of the first, Nemesis has those twin blades there. If I remember correctly, kind of the way that they're described is that if you, they're so warm that if you were actually to, like, throw it into the ground, it would cut all the way through to the core of a planet. Like it's that strong. I don't know if that's actually going to happen in the series, but it's kind of how it's described in the novelization, which I highly recommend if you haven't gotten a chance to check that out yet, because it is the full extended director's cut, the R-rated version. So there's a lot of not so child friendly things in that thing, but it gives you a full sense of exactly what the vision for part one is supposed to be. And they're not going to do the same thing with part two, to my understanding, where they're going to release it a week later. The novelization, that is, which again will be the full three-hour R-rated version. I think they're waiting like a couple months in order to release that, or at least they delayed it for whatever reason. Maybe because so many people were spoiling probably what actually happens in part one in the extended cut in that. But again, you're going to get a lot of the backstory of all these characters. I saw Tarek with a Bennu, Nemesis with a child, like all this is going to be on full display here, so you can get a lot more of that characterization that people, I think, were asking for in part one. I literally love part one, but I can understand some of the criticisms that people had, I think, in a three-hour cut, which are certainly there, we'll have. And then when both, you know, 6 hours back-to-back, part one, part two are there, you'll have this full story to really engross yourself in the Rebel Moon universe and all that. So this is really great. Again, the action is stellar. Everyone's on full 110% giving their best here. You see it from the villains, you see it from the protagonists, you see a lot of that Seven Samurai influence in this, and let's just say war is coming to Velt, and this is exactly what I was expecting here when it's described as a war film straight through and through. In this full almost 2.5 minute trailer, it was almost nothing but war bits here. So I gotta imagine that's gonna be a wonderful, wonderful display of action across this film. And it's a Zack Snyder film. So would you expect any less on that front? Absolutely not. Jimmy, I think, is gonna be the real standout in this movie, as he was in part one. And you're gonna get a lot more of him in the R-rated cut as well. but perhaps him fighting to a large degree in this show is really what brings him to the forefront here. So you're going to get Korra's backstory, so many backstories. You're probably going to see the thing that happened with Princess Issa and that fully explained and all that stuff. So all the I hate to say it, but again, you know, people, and when you know a part two is coming and there's probably aspects of it that weren't included in that for a reason, let the story play out as it was intended to do. So I think once people see part one and part two back to back, they'll be able to like say, okay, this is the full piece of art and judge it for itself. So I hope that you all give Rebel Moon part two a stream on April 19th when it comes out. And you know, of course, we'll be talking about it here on Force Coast Conversation. So get ready for all that. And with that, folks, we've gotten through all of our trailer conversations here. But before we get into our Bad Batch conversation, I want to ask you all, what were your favorite parts from both trailers? Did you love them? Did you hate them? What are you thinking about? Be sure to reach us out on our social media channels. We're available on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, TikTok, Hive. Just search for Force Ghost Conversations and you'll find us in some capacity on those platforms. And we'd love to interact with you all as we continue to grow the proverbial seeds around the Force Ghost Conversations campfire. Whew, that was a lot. That was a mouthful. But we'll be right back on the other side of the short break with some conversation about the Bad Batch Season 3, Episode 8, Bad Territory. Stay tuned. All right, everybody, welcome back to Force Ghost Conversations. And I told you, this was an action-packed episode. You got so much from all the news to the Acolyte to Rebel Moon Part 2. And now we're here to discuss Bad Batch. And of course, Mrs. Force Ghost Conversations is here to give her thoughts and insights into the show. How you doing, Elise?
Hello, I'm doing well. Thank you. Glad to be back.
Glad to have you. And we're here to talk about the 8th episode from Season 3 of the Bad Batch, Bad Territory. When you first heard that title, what did it make you think of? Were you like, oh no, what have we done here? Or did like nothing bad can happen in an episode titled Bad Territory?
I don't think I really thought anything, but you made a joke and I'm like trying to remember what it was. It was like a Britney Spears song or something.
I think it was like a Taylor Swift song.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, I can't do it for the bot. We're in bad territory.
Yeah, that's so I think you beat me to it in terms of thinking anything. I think at the end of the day, I just thought it was a play on words.
To derail the conversation already, territory or territory? What do you think it is?
I don't think there's a wrong answer.
Some people would maybe. If you're a territory person.
Who says territory?
Well, I think it's like, I think I've only heard it like people with like a British accent.
So it'd be right for them. Like weird for us. Like,
oh yes, the territory.
Yeah, you've watched more like British stuff than I have, so you would know. But there's no wrong answer. Tomato, tomato, right?
Tomato. Anywho, I've already derailed the conversation. We're doing great here. It's been a long night of recording here between all the other stuff we've talked about here on the show. I think this is a really solid episode of The Bad Batch. This is one of those that I can already hear the internet conversation being like, does it move the needle forward at all? And it's like, yeah, a little bit.
What are you talking about? Of course it does.
I mean, it's not like five people died and stuff like that. And like the whole plan for the M count is discovered. It's a very insular story that gets them to like, okay, Fennec Shand then says, we'll get you in contact with this person to find the M count thing. Right, so I could see on paper that people will be like, "Eh, it doesn't really move." But
a journey takes small steps and big steps.
I think you and I are able to see the larger picture at play here. So, what are your overall thoughts?
I don't think it was wasted time at all.
Oh, I agree with you. I don't.
Like the next logical step was Hunter figuring out why Omega is wanted. They have to do that kind of like surreptitiously on the down low.
Yes.
So that makes complete sense to me. I don't really like read Twitter or anything, but maybe other people are saying that and they wanted some big climax or whatever, but I love this episode. I thought it was
really
so fun.
You loved it. I love hearing that.
Yeah. I thought it was, first of all, I got some things I wanted. I got to see like the Bad Batch, like part of them be the Bad Batch again, like Hunter got to show off his tracking skills.
Yeah. That's probably the most, like,
yeah, like we don't get to see too often. Yeah, I've asked for that for weeks, and we got to see it. It's like I was in Filoni's head, anticipating what we needed. And
when will the hunting guy actually hunt something down?
Yeah, when will we show the tracker? Like Wrecker got to show not only like his silly side, but just how freaking strong he is,
mm-hmm.
wrestling these crocodile monsters.
Mm-hmm.
I love Fennec Shan. I love bounty hunters in general because they're slimy, but they're also intriguing. And I did think it moved the needle, and I really loved the moments, like the soft moments between Omega and Crosshair. So to me, I thought it was a really well-rounded episode. It gave me like character dynamics I've wanted to see, mm-hmm. and it was fun. And it leaves you at the end being like, uh-oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can I say though, when we both saw Pabu at the beginning of the episode, we were like, oh no, they keep coming back here. The Empire like gets closer and closer to finding them in this poor
I will say that's the only time I felt any sense of like worry in the episode.
Yeah.
Where they're like, all right, it's called Bad Territory. And then that's when they show Pabu right away. You're like, oh great, is this it? Is this when they're in bad territory? Is this the bad territory? And even not if the Empire like comes in, maybe the bad territory is like Pabu is like on a sinking island and the island starts sinking in again. Like, please don't.
Wow, the longer they stay there, the higher the risk the Empire finds them.
And as the episodes start to decrease on the amount of time we have left in this show, you're like, okay, stuff's gonna happen. And Pabu, every time we see him, like, please don't. Shock to the system.
Yeah, for sure.
Before we really dive into kind of the nitty gritty of the episode, I did want to say one of the aspects that I really enjoyed about this show was that, and I don't want it to be, this is not a criticism at all, but the way that the episode was structured, both in writing and execution, was formulaic. But it was formulaic to what I think a perfect Star Wars story is.
Yeah. I would say it's very reminiscent of like earlier Bad Batch episodes or Clone Wars episodes. Like,
yeah.
There's a blueprint.
Exactly. 100%. Like if someone were to come up to me and say, what is Star Wars? I might show them this episode. Like it's a quick way to get the idea of what it is, right? We preach this all the time on the podcast. It is this 12-year-old morality story. Well, not to say 12, but for the coming of age story for the 12-year-old within all of us, mm-hmm. to have these morality tales played out on a large scale. And this is tip of the iceberg storytelling where every time you turn a corner, there's a cliffhanger, there's an action sequence, there's something you have to face, but or challenge.
Like real character development,
exactly.
Emotion, like a gravitas to it,
exactly.
Even as it's funny.
And especially when we get to the swamp and Fennec Shan's like, all right, you gotta go in the water. Well, what's in the water? Well, that's the first part. And then you get in the water and you're like, okay, this isn't bad. And then you go under the water and you see these like, of minds, and you're like, okay, great, that's the next challenge, and you have to disarm them, and then great, what's the crocodiles?
Yeah.
And then what's next? This like praying mantis kind of monster.
Yep.
It's just like, what's next? What's next? What's next? And each scene ends on that cliffhanger, which is definitely to the formula George was thinking of when he crafted this in the beginning.
Yeah, I think you're 100% right. And it just shows that formulaic doesn't mean wasted space.
And formula doesn't mean bad.
No, it just, yeah, and I think like Filoni has taken this craft, especially in a short episode format, and like really honed it to perfection, mm-hmm. and is using it in the best of the ability to, so far to me, give a like a really solid season of where like I don't feel like, oh my gosh, when are we just gonna get to the next part? Like I don't feel that way, mm-hmm. personally.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. You're enjoying the moment.
Yeah. But I don't feel like, oh come on, let's just get to it. This is like waste space. So.
And they don't feel rushed at all either. I'm always like, crap, that was 30 minutes?
I know.
Like, that's it? I gotta wait a whole nother week?
Yeah, it was weird having one episode this week.
Yeah, we've been spoiled with like the 3-episode intro, mm-hmm. or and then the two episode.
Yeah.
So let's start with the Omega and Crosshair portion of it, because that was more of an insular part of the story, and then we can talk about the other.
Mm-hmm.
This was the side quest, and then there was the main quest. Again, back to the formula again, in a way. They're having this conversation at Wrecker's, not Hunter, but not Wrecker, but Hunter's request for Omega to reach out to Crosshair. What do you think of him asking her to do that? Like, she still is kind of a kid, and to ask, you know, it's just an interesting play on their relationship that Hunter is now being like, hey, you can maybe get to him in a way that we can't.
Yeah, I mean, to me, Hunter's a leader, and leaders mean knowing how to get the job done, and it's not always if you can get the job done. And I think we saw when we had that episode where Hunter and Crosshair had those big, deep conversations, like on some levels, they're very similar. Mm-hmm. They're alphas, right? And so I think there's going to be some natural resistance. Crosshair doesn't want to seem weak in front of someone he probably right. admires. And Hunter, I think, can get easily frustrated with Crosshair because mm-hmm. I think they're kind of similar in a lot of ways. And like Omega is not a kid. I mean, she's a kid, but mm-hmm. she hasn't had kid experiences. She understands more than them what Crosshair went through. And they obviously had a bond from escaping and surviving together. So I think it's just a really insightful like leadership quality that Hunter has.
Yeah.
And, you know, we all hear messages differently from different people. Like the same message from my parents would not resonate if like my sister told me, mm-hmm. right? Like mm-hmm. it's
right. Right.
Or if my friend told me versus you, you know, if you just like take information in differently. So I think that was a very like realistic thing for Hunter to ask Omega to do.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's good coaching. It's like putting your players in a position to succeed.
Yeah, exactly.
He and Wrecker are going off on a mission to further the story, to find out more mm-hmm. about the M count. And knowing full well that Omega and shouldn't be on this mission because she's directly tied to the consequences of it.
She puts everyone at risk as she goes.
That they're staying behind. They can also do something for the betterment of the group, fixing Crosshair, or at least trying to fix Crosshair.
Because he can't protect them as well as he could have before.
He's not as effective as he once was.
He's just as smart and just as like wily.
Plain and clear.
Yeah.
Like, he was missing.
Yeah, he's missing.
when you're a sniper and like you don't miss. Like you don't have value if you miss.
Yeah. Because then it's just anyone shooting a gun off.
Yeah. And not every target's going to be a big thing.
Yeah.
Sometimes you're going to need to thread that needle like we've seen him do. And now he's losing that ability. And AZ, our favorite droid, does some tests
so
on
cute.
Him.
So cute. I just have to say, AZ is so cute.
I'm just glad to see him not dead every time I see him to confirm that he's still there. Like, I don't ever want to be in a world where we don't know where he's at. I need to know that he's safe and comfortable all the time.
I want like an AZ droid, but I don't know how they do it because he floats.
Oh, I'm sure Disney could find a way if they really want to.
Yeah, I want to go to Galaxy's Edge and pick up an AZ.
Do the droid builder. Build your own AZ.
Maybe if we got a Roomba, we can make him look like AZ, and then our Roomba would make us feel like he's around.
What are you thinking here? Like, get the Roomba and then put him on top of the Roomba?
Like, yeah, have some sort of like...
And then it's like the droid going around.
Yeah, someone on the internet tell Anthony how to do that. How to make an AZ Roomba work.
Yeah.
Because I can't think of it, but I have a feeling we could do it.
Let me sit on that. I can try and figure something out.
It would make
out.
Me so
First
happy.
First off, we need to have AZ as a...
Like 3D like printing exists.
Figure. 3D, yeah, I don't really know people like that. So.
Come together, internet. Come help us have an AZ Roomba.
Make this happen, and we'll make TikToks about it.
All right, this time it was my turn that got us off track.
Yeah. So AZ does the test, and he's like, medically, there's nothing wrong with physically, there's nothing wrong with you.
I thought that was surprising.
And he's like, but mentally, if you open up to me, maybe we can chat, like, we can diagnose the problem here. Crosshair is reluctant to that. But then through Omega's suggestion, he's kind of more open to talking to her. Again, is that more of the, she knows how to connect with him more emotionally than anybody has ever been able to? And what do you think of their meditation towards the end of the episode?
First of all, I relate so hard to Crosshair with his attempt at meditation.
This isn't working.
I really try sometimes in my life at different points. I've really tried and I'm just like, it doesn't stick. But I did think it was really interesting that the writers decided to go in the direction of making it very clear this was not a physical issue. Because a tremor after torture, like, very much could be.
Mm-hmm.
But I've read books like fantasy and sci-fi where there have been, like, physical trauma done to a body. And then the body holds on to it.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I've learned through other, like, readings and stuff, like, your body holds on to trauma
mm-hmm.
in different ways, whether it's physical or mental. And it's not just like mental pain. It can actually manifest in physical degradation.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought it was just very deep and interesting. And again, like, I feel like Omega, because she is younger than him, there's just like a safe place there. She still has an innocence, and like, you're not going to yell at her, right? Like,
or you're going to do it and feel bad afterwards.
Yeah. And he does really care for her. I believe that. So I think it's more of a safe place to try things you're uncomfortable with, mm-hmm. with someone like Omega. And kids have shown that all the time.
Right.
It's like why we tell our secrets to our dogs. Not that Omega is like a pet, but it's just a safe place.
Omega is as safe as it can be when it comes to what we do here. In terms of what is going on in this show. And I'm glad that she has taken this leap of growth in this episode and in the last couple of episodes. It just continues to showcase that she is really the standout of this series in many ways. Okay, let's transition over to the other group.
You seem like you're getting emotional.
Well, yeah, Omega rocks. You get her theme in the background at various points. Like, it's just playing off well. Omega's a great character. I can't wait to see where she goes.
Okay. I'm glad it really resonated with you.
Thank you. Me too. Onto the other side of things, we've got our boys Wrecker and Hunter. They team up with Fennec Shand. Of course, they meet her out, and she's doing a bunch of bounty work, as she always does.
Can I interrupt?
You can.
I love that the combo was Wrecker and Hunter, because mm-hmm. within like the Bad Batch group, they're opposites, right? Like, he's chaotic, Hunter's very methodical and serious, like Wrecker's not serious. I just love the dynamic of them pairing up, and since we didn't really get to see too much of it when they were like scouring the galaxy for Omega, it was fun to see them on another mission together.
Right. It was cool. It was nice to see like variations of the team in different scenarios.
Right? Yeah, and they work well together, even though mm-hmm. like they're not the same. You know, they're so different.
Yeah. And in this episode, they have to do a mission on behalf of Fennec so that she, you know, it's the payoff. You do this for me, I do this for you. She knows nothing at this point about the M count bounties.
Oh my gosh, audience, you should have seen Anthony.
Again, we were
when he was teased. Like waiting for the pirate to like explain what M count is, and like, do we know what it is? No. Have you heard of it? Yes. When did you hear of it? I don't know. I need to learn more. Like, you were just like, come on.
Yeah,
it was
literally just a straight tease the entire time. They were like, we got it. No, we don't. We got it. We'll figure it out. No, we don't. Oh, we're on the cusp of greatness again, folks. And they just can't keep doing this to us.
They're eventually, doing it on purpose.
Eventually, they know what they're doing at this point. They really know what they're doing. And it's eventually they're going to have to say it because the fans will not let it slide again. Anywho.
I will say too, it will be interesting because like when you've brought up like Jedi powers in the past with other Star Wars stories, like it's so far down the line when people don't even believe Jedi are real. Mm-hmm. And now like the clones know Jedi are real. They've worked with them. They've, you know, fought with them. It'll resonate a lot with them and they'll take it seriously, I think.
Yeah. I bet you as soon as I say the word midichlorian, then Rex will be like, oh yes, I remember. That's what that was the entire time.
Oh, I could only wish for a flashback. Wouldn't that be awesome?
It would be great. That'd be great. Or even if, you know, I just did the D. Bradley Baker version of Rex there. It's a thing, but it could be the Tim Morrison, the I heard once about the M count.
Yeah, you're much better at distinguishing between the two than me.
Anywho, so we got in this episode, the whole purpose of the what they do for Fennec is going to basically Louisiana.
I know, it was so fun to see it as a whole planet.
Which I think is probably the only environment that has yet to be really traversed is swamp.
You know what I was thinking is if we ever go tour the Florida Everglades, like we could actually pretend.
we could make it this out to be like us going through the swamps. Unfortunately, I don't know what this planet is called. Yeah, maybe it's in the subtitles, but or they said in the episode. I couldn't remember. And the data bank episode is, or the portion of the episode or that they do on StarWars.com where they give some of the more details wasn't up at the time of recording this. So I don't know the full canon name of that planet yet, but it is fun to see, watch it be like
swampland.
Louisiana, something like that. Just be like as close to Louisiana as possible. I mean, it's literally like a whatever, French Creole ship too that they're on is kind of very much like a swamp.
Like the fan boats.
Yeah, with the fan. I don't know exactly what they're called, but we're all thinking in our heads, we're talking about it, right?
We know.
It's clear imagery that we can think of when we think of swamps. We've seen swamp people in the History Channel. This is what they're riding out when they go out into the swampland.
Yep.
But the engine's a pod, like a pod race engine on that ship. I don't know if you caught that detail, which I thought was cool. There's gators, huge souped up gators. Wrecker doesn't get eaten for once. That's pretty cool.
I know. I was like, he's dominating these gators. It's nice to see. Because sometimes you're like, oh, he's just a big kid. And you're like, no, this is a fully grown man that can wrestle gators.
Did you want to see him at any point just like break the jaws? Of the gators.
Now
just,
that you like, say that, it would have been really
satisfying.
It doesn't
fit with the Star Wars, like...
No, it's not the Star Wars brand.
Especially the animation.
But if this was, like, live action with Stallone, he definitely would be breaking some jaws.
Yeah, certainly. Maybe even Book of Boba Fett would have.
It makes me wonder, like, down the road in other animation, like, they could always have, like, a Jaws-type planet. Where all of a sudden they're wrestling sharks.
Well, they had that... They had that, like, the shark creature in Star Wars. Because in that Clone Wars episode, there was that guy that's like Biff Tannen, who's a clear riff on Back to the Future. And it's on the underwater planet, the Mon Cala versus the Corran. And he's the guy that's, like, trying to orchestrate this, like, takeover.
Right.
So they have shark people. So I assume there's a whole planet of it.
Huh. Interesting. Yeah, but it was fun to see Crocs.
Yeah, it was neat. And I was like, wow, they're really just alligators, just souped up. There's not the whole bunch of like Star Wars imagination to it.
No, but I like the idea that the galaxy is so big that we would recognize some things in it. And then there would be some like really crazy space stuff. But it's...
Naturally. And then you have a big praying mantis.
I know. I mean, what a tough... It took like a million stuns for that thing to go down.
A good couple of stuns on him. And then he's like, I'm going under. And then like, I will say, I don't know what your thoughts on this were. So I'm going to ask you here, obviously. But what were your thoughts on the lighting of this episode? Like, it got kind of dark there towards the end, which I really thought was great.
You did put the turn the lights off.
Oh, I turned the lights off, yeah, because I wanted to see it better.
You know what? I think from your other podcasts, you've gotten like to be very good at analyzing like lighting, cinematography, sound design. I'm still just like, whoa, that was cool. Like a high level, like, that was a great fight scene. I loved it. You know, so I didn't really notice it until you turned the lights off. And I was like, whoa, that's like really popular.
I am seeing a lot more now.
Yeah.
I thought it was neat because I don't know 100% if I'm accurate on this, but it's like bugs see better at night. Is that true?
I mean, imagine it's true. Sometimes they have those big old eyes.
Baby praying mantises. See better at night. I don't know. And that was an advantage towards, or at least dim lit settings.
Yeah.
I guess there, but he was a hard bug to track down.
I'm glad he was that difficult to like get into cuffs because I was like, Fennec Shand's a badass. Like it shouldn't be that hard.
Yeah, she should do it herself. Why does she need these two souped up clones to do it?
Yeah, but I was like, okay, no, he's Wily.
It's a full team.
Yeah, I get it.
I thought it was just so pulpy of this episode, too. Like, nothing was a bad idea. Someone at the table, when they pitched this episode, was like, all right, we need to have them do a fun mission with Fennec Shand. What do we need to do? And I bet you someone in that writer's room was like, I'm from Louisiana. What if they did a swamp battle?
Yeah, and I could see it being
gators,
a writer's,
and they were
like...
Yes, that's great. What are they actually fighting gators? Absolutely. Just make them bigger.
Yeah.
Make a ton of them.
Yeah, like someone's personal story is the footprint for the episode.
And what if the main thing that they're tracking down is a big praying mantis, but it's actually like an assassin, mobster, villain kind of thing? It's like, yeah, all right, great. Everything works.
And it's wonderful because it's fun. It's Star Wars, like you said, but it's still not irrelevant. Like,
yeah, you're not looking at it going like, yeah, that's taking me out of it.
We know Fennec Shand from like, and she understands who Omega is. She understands like... who the clones are and what they're about. And how did you interpret that last conversation?
Which last, like with Fennec and Hunter and Wrecker?
No, Fennec.
Or Fennec and the person she calls.
Yeah.
As in terms of like Is it a doom or gloom kind of call? Yeah. Like this person is now going to hunt them down and, yeah, and take them out?
Yeah.
I think you have to assume that. Doom. Like this is a Fennec Shand that is... This isn't Book of Boba Fett Fennec Shand. This is Mandalorian Bennett Fennec Shand. Where...
Yeah.
This is not even Mandalorian Season 2. This is Mandalorian Season 1.
But she likes Omega.
She likes money. And if she gets a...
Do you think she could look past that with Omega?
At this point, I have no reason to indicate that she would. As much as I love Omega, I think until we get Fennec Shand, where she's like, I'm tired of inept leaders. I'm following you, Boba Fett, because I believe in what you're doing here. That I don't see a change in her character trajectory to indicate otherwise.
I mean, yeah. I mean, the tone and like how she was talking definitely said gloom. But I was like, dude, you were so... sympathetic on some level.
Or maybe that is her, like she chose who to call, so maybe it's a fighting chance against the person
maybe
she
it's
called.
Sid, maybe Sid trying to track them down.
Oh,
because
I mean,
like she feels guilty.
I'm interested. That's where you, I was gonna ask you, who do you think she called? Because is that where you're
no, I think it could be, I think it could, I mean obviously it could be a Empire POC point of contact, but
oh, I wasn't thinking that either.
Okay, I was, but I was like, on the good side, it could be Sid. If like Sid was like feeling really guilty and like trying to like connect back with him or something. I don't know. I don't know why I'm so like set on Sid redeeming herself. But I was like, I could see that. That conversation makes sense with that. But who were you thinking?
Asajj Ventress.
Oh, that's right. I keep forgetting
she's, in the trailer,
she's a thing.
So like she's going to come up eventually.
I think I heard one of the podcasts you were listening to talking about like when are we gonna get Asajj, when are we gonna get us, and I keep forgetting that she's even a part of this story. I don't know, maybe because I like her, but I'm not like, oh my gosh, she's everything, but I keep forgetting she's supposed to be a thing.
I mean, she's only in the trailer for a split second, so it could really be Cad Bane too. He's in the trailer.
Yeah, but they're rivals.
Money's money.
I could see Asajj Ventress wanting Omega for her own M count thing that has nothing to do.
Yeah,
I mean,
I don't know.
She knows magic, so.
I mean, she also has an M count, so.
Yeah, maybe she's like, I can turn her into a witch.
But then
know.
They have to do the whole thing about Dark Side. That's a whole thing. We'll get into that episode when the time comes.
That's where I'm
leading at is.
Are you like at the like edge of your seat waiting for Asajj to come back, or are you just like?
Oh, I keep thinking about it. I just am excited to see. I'm not like worrying about it or like overly anticipating it because I think I'm at a middle point here where I just like, I just need to see what it is.
Okay.
I'm not neither anticipating nor dreading it.
I'm just curious.
I'm just intrigued because I know what happens in the book Dark Disciple. And they've said that the events of that book line up with the storytelling they're doing in this.
What in the timing of that book is where? Before this?
That's before the Clone War ends.
Okay.
So it's years before this.
Okay. All right.
At this point.
I don't know Dark Disciple, so.
And so that's why I'm not spoiling it until you say spoil it for me.
I know. I'm still thinking I'll get the audiobook.
So, you know, they say the storytelling is going to line up. The producers have said it already. So I have to trust it. And that's why I'm cautiously optimistic.
Okay.
I'm a nice middle there. I think it's her. That'd be my guess.
That'd be really interesting. Way more interesting than the Empire.
I hope it's not the Empire. That would be Hemlock. That'd be trash.
Well, that's why I'm like, it's not like in line with the character based off of like how I get that she's not like the Fennec Shand.
She would just
call
the Empire on a whim. Let's just say that. So no. I don't think that's the case.
No, I think her interaction with these characters, like, yeah, I think Ventress makes way more sense.
Yeah, Ventress.
Oh, good idea.
So we'll have to see how it plays out. We got a brand new episode coming next week. Where do you think it goes from here? Do they go back? And is this the Pabu destruction episode? What are we talking about here in this next week?
Is this one of the times where we get two episodes or just one?
I think it's just the one. I don't think this is the two yet.
If we're not doing multiple episodes in a row, I still think based off the trailer, we're in that collection of allies or interactions with important people type thing. Like I think... Mm-hmm. There's a bunch of strings out there. We're in the second half of the season. We need to tie them together, and we need one or two more episodes to put more players on the board, mm-hmm. where we then tie it all in a bow at the end. So I think it's still a couple exploratory episodes to come.
That'd be really cool.
What do you think?
what do I want and what do I think happens?
What do you want?
What do I want to happen? Them just to go back to Pabu and fish.
No, what you really want is someone to say, we found what M count is.
And then I want just Rex to pop up on a hologram and be like, oh, I've heard it's midichlorians that they're looking for.
And Crosshair like heals and he has no trouble. And
Crosshair goes, yes, the Empire talked about that once. And then Wrecker goes, oh, we need to just get some food.
And then, I'm hungry.
I'm hungry. And then they just call it a day.
That's not happening.
That's not happening, though. So realistically, Pabu collapses in on itself. And they have
That's the next episode? You think the next episode is Pabu collapsing?
The Empire rains fire from the skies on Pabu. Everything is destroyed.
Okay, no, tell me real.
The shadow assassin of Tech comes down and steals Omega.
The shadow assassin of Tech? Tell me the real. What's happening? What do you think?
What's the real? Maybe more of that shadow assassin gets explored, because that seems like a one-off episode that could be...
Yeah, that's true. And you could have the...
And then you have the rest of the season to kind of deal with the fallout of that. If it is Tech, if it's not Tech, whoever it is. Again, they did spend so much time on that.
I will cry.
That needs to be talked about in some degree. So that's where I kind of land with that. But
okay.
We'll see what happens. We only have a couple days to go until that point.
Well, overall, I continue to be happy. I continue to be excited. And I just love the Bad Batch.
Yeah, just think, through almost 3.5 seasons, or 2.5 seasons, it's a pretty smooth sailing ship.
I feel like we need this show's like themes on vinyl.
It'd be great to tell Disney to do that, because they don't really do it for the animated stuff.
That's so stupid, because like Omega's theme is worth vinyl alone.
Yeah, tell Disney.
Disney, make a vinyl of all your... Make a vinyl of all your animated shows, please. Thank you.
Do it. Now I will pay handsomely.
Yeah. You will get more money.
You will get money from an audience, that being me at the very least. All right, folks, we've talked enough. I've talked enough tonight. Let me just say that across this entire episode. So thank you for joining us on this action-packed episode of Force Ghost Conversations. We'll be back next time, next week, to discuss the next episode in the Bad Batch, episode 9 of season 3. So stay tuned. We'll be back in your podcast feeds very soon. Until then, may the Force be with you. Take care.